This podcast is a quest for well-being, a quest for a meaningful life through the exploration of fundamental truth. Enlightening ideas, insights on physical, mental, and spiritual health. The inspiration is love. The aspiration is to awaken new ways of thinking that can lead us to a new way of being. Being well. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Soul Healing Conversations.
You must grieve the loss of who you were before you can accept the reality of who you have become. Susan Kelly is a successful author of humor and relationship books and is a veteran of the talk show circuit, including an appearance on Oprah. Until recently, she was living and working with her artist husband between homes in Florence, Italy and Sarasota, Florida. A fit and attractive former model who was always on the go, Susan thought she was invincible and did not feel old. And then she fell off a train. She had another bad fall, and then another. Searching for answers, she started to chronicle her journey with no idea what would be causing the problem. She just needed someone to fix it. She saw a parade of doctors and specialists. Her often amusing and always frustrating quest ultimately led to a definitive diagnosis, a progressive condition with no treatment or cure. Now she had to figure out how to move forward. And she kept writing because she learned that an astonishing number of people are being challenged by chronic disease. Maybe you are one of them. These diseases and conditions have an impact on just about all of us. On these pages, you will read an honest, courageous, and brilliantly comic account about one woman's real-life challenges to find and then face a life-changing diagnosis. Valeria interviews Susan Kelly. She is the author of The Diagnosis Diaries, a frank, funny, and poignant book for anyone touched by chronic disease. Susan Kelly is also the author of Real Women Send Flowers, Why Men Commit, Why Men Stray, Why Men Stay, The Second Time Around, Everything You Need to Know to Make Your Remarriage Happy, I, Oprah'd, and Other Adventures of a Woman of a Certain Age, and Ciao, Pussy, A Memoir of Florence, published in September 2015 and retitled Forever Florence, A Memoir in 2022. Her best-selling relationship books have been translated into several foreign languages, including Japanese, Polish, Turkish, and Dutch. Susan has appeared as a guest relationship expert on The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Early Show on CBS News, Homepage MSNBC, Fox TV, and numerous other national and local television programs throughout the country, as well as hundreds of radio interviews in the United States and Canada. She lives in Florence, Italy in Sarasota, Florida. Meet Susan at SusanKellyAuthor.com. Here is the interview with Susan Kelly.
In your own words, who is Susan Kelly?
Well, I just a woman who was at the right time, born at the right time, and was lucky enough to grow up when the women's lives were changing, and we were given opportunities that certainly my mother didn't have. We had choices. So I'm that person, and I grew up thinking I would be married happily ever after and have a bunch of children, and that's not what happened to me. And because of the opportunities available, after I realized I made a mistake when I married my first husband, Mr. Wrong, Mr. Very Wrong, and stupidly brought two children into the world. But anyway, I had the opportunity to leave, and I did, and it was very difficult. And that was my first time that I actually identified. I identified as a single mother for many, many years and was just a fighter, determined to get back on track, even though I had this bad situation in my life. But then I became really, from that, a storyteller. I had a life. I did work that brought me money enough to raise my children. I did a lot of commercial modeling and TV commercials, and as did my children. But I loved to tell stories. And I would say that's what I am, a storyteller. And I really tell stories about my life. What my first book was Real Women Send Flowers. I was single, and I was talking about what it was like being single in the 80s and the 70s. Now I'm telling a story that I didn't think I would be telling. I also wrote about living in Florence, Italy for many years, because that's what I was. And then I became a wife. But who am I? I would have to say I tell stories and put them down. And they generally, I'm writing about my life. So I write about things, the way I see things, and about living in Florence, about being single, about when I remarried for the first time, I wrote this Why Men Commit book. Yeah. I mean, that is funny how you think of yourself. I came from the worst marriage in the history of humanity, and I ended up on Oprah Winfrey as the relationship expert because I wrote this book. So it's funny, but that's not who I thought I really was. But anyway, So I'm telling the story because life goes on and you're just sort of barreling through and suddenly something you don't expect and you don't know how to deal with just hits you in the face and you have to kind of figure it out. And the only way I could figure it out was by writing about it. So I'm a writer of stories.
Yes.
A storyteller.
How wonderful, and a beautiful writer at that, for being authentic, just having your life as the role model, the example for others.
Yeah.
You're just helping a lot of people by being you. That's what really is.
Well, I think if people think, well, if she can do it, I can do
right.
it, you know?
Right, right. How wonderful.
But
you did mention, you just begin with the, you know, having choices as a woman. What is to be a woman these days, Susan? How do you feel about our evolution, per se?
Well, I thought we were doing pretty well until what's going on now. I thought we were doing great, but now with the abortion issue being questioned and books being removed from schools, I think we're going a little bit backwards now. So we have to try harder.
That's sad to hear, isn't it? That
it is.
As humans, we're still living from outdated concepts, ideas, or ideals of what is to be a human, how to live a life.
Right.
And creating all these limitations, right, Susan? That's what it feels like. It feels very limited.
Right. I mean, in some ways, we've made great strides in the workforce. And, you know, it's when I was 20 years old, I was a flight attendant. It was considered the most fabulous and high-paying job at the time. But you couldn't be a pilot. Now, when I get on a plane and I see a female pilot, I'm very happy.
Yes. Which is, I haven't seen them yet. A female pilot yet. I'm glad you did in person. Oh, you traveled a lot, so that makes sense too.
I traveled a lot, and that is the most difficult thing for me now in my current mobility challenged situation. I really miss traveling. I've tried. I mean, I have traveled up until the last year, but it's difficult. You know, yes. You don't want to really walk around the streets, the cobblestone streets in Italy with a walker. It's not the same.
Right.
It's not the same thing.
Yes. And, you know, I felt that I'm sorry for that. I think that's the empathy in me, because I was able to kind of picture you as this very lively woman going everywhere, doing all these things. And then all of a sudden you're limited. You can't do certain things. So it brought like, you know, this feeling of sadness in me for a moment. And then just right after this admiration for you, for the courage that you have to write a book about it. And that's the topic of this interview, the Diagnosis Diaries. So the title is The Diagnosis Diaries, a frank, funny, and poignant book for anyone touched by chronic disease. So talk to me for a moment about the main purpose of writing the book.
I'm sorry, the main purpose of...
Yeah, the main intention. Did you set an intention when you wrote this book?
You know, when I started to write it, I didn't write it as a book. I was making notes because I couldn't figure out what was happening. At first, I just couldn't lift my feet off the floor.
Right.
Then we were traveling, and my husband is very positive, and he was saying, oh, you're just tired. You'll be fine, you know. And and then I went to a neurologist. I went to my own doctor. I started going, and nobody could figure out what it was. It's not really the fault of the medical community, because it's a very rare disease.
Right.
Mostly men get it, and they just didn't know what to do. So they're used to saying, well, take steroids, or, you know, you can go on this particular drug. But finally, after 2 years, we are fortunate enough to have a friend where we live who is a physician, and he knew somebody who is the head of myositis at the National Institute of Health. And he said, if I can get you an appointment, will you go? It's in Bethesda. We said, yeah, we'll go. So we went there, and I felt fortunate. Oh, the doctor that I went to where I live put me on this medication that she thought was for a disease that I didn't have. And as soon as I got to this specialist, he said, get off the methotrexate immediately, because it's going to destroy your organs, and you don't have that disease. You have something called inclusion body myositis, which I never heard of.
Yeah.
And it's basically a slow-moving muscle degeneration, and you start falling. That's how people, and then you can't pick things up. It goes into your hands, but it starts in your quadriceps. And I was always exercising. And by the way, my mother had just died at age 99, and she was a little challenging, shall we say, to be taken care of, not very grateful. And my husband used to say, she's going to kill you. She's going to outlive you. But anyway, and that brings you, they don't know what this disease came from. But basically, what I'm finding out is that many things we do in our life trigger autoimmune diseases, like not handling stress.
Right.
Well, not taking care of yourself. I mean, there was nothing else wrong with me. And I was running around and really having a great life. I felt very, very lucky living in Italy for 20 years. I'm writing, my husband's painting, going out, having a great life. I really felt everything was good. And all of a sudden, I end up with this bizarre thing. And when they look at you and say, there's no cure. Well, what do you mean there's no cure? And there's no treatment. All you can do is exercise. And that's what they told me.
Right. Wow. Yeah, I was really not surprised to hear that when I read the review about this, the connection between stress and any form of disease, any illness. Because we are, I mean, everything's connected and we tend to forget that, right, Susan?
Yes.
That's not separate. So we're not parts only. We are the whole. So for now, I guess the question that comes to mind is, what is the goal for you? Like I would say, the question is, what's the goal of healing from IBM? What do you have an expectation for that?
I do. That's a great question. And I do, because I really think you just can't give up, and you really have to keep hope alive, because if you have hope, you're a little bit in control.
Yes.
So, I really don't give up.
Yes, that's beautiful. I love that.
But I have stayed in touch with this doctor who gave me the diagnosis.
Yeah.
And he is at National Institute of Health, and he keeps telling me, wait, we might have a drug, but you must exercise.
Yes.
So I exercise all the time, and I go to physical therapy. Mm-hmm. But I've stayed in touch, and I have followed a drug that's out now, and I have persisted. I am everybody's biggest pain in the neck. I have haunted these people and found out that there was a clinical drug trial.
Yeah.
I tried to get into it in Boston, and I was not able to because I don't live there.
Yeah.
But I said, we have children here. I can be here. Yeah. But they had a big waiting list. So I called the lab, and I kind of called them. I called them twice a week for 6 weeks until they finally called me back. And I said, I want to get into this trial because this is a drug. They have tried drugs in the past in clinical trials for inclusion body myositis, but they were not created for that disease. One in particular was created for kidney rejection, but they thought they'd try it on that disease, on inclusion body myositis. No surprise, it didn't work.
Right.
And it kind of destroys your organs. So I found out there was a new drug from a company in Newton, Massachusetts, and they had this drug that was specifically invented for inclusion by myositis, where it went after the T cells and stopped the your body fighting each other and stopped the inflammation.
Nice.
So what I found out was from pestering the lab was that they would be bringing it to Jacksonville, Florida, Mayo Clinic. So he said, the man at the lab said, you would be best pursuing the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville because you live in that state of Florida and they haven't started recruiting yet. So I switched all my energy onto the neurologist there and pestered him. So tenacity is my strong point.
Yes.
So finally, I went to see him a year ago and I said, I had to get all my files sent to him, muscle biopsies, which is the definitive factor in the diagnosis. I had all the records sent to this doctor in Jacksonville who would be in charge of the trial. And believe it or not, it finally came that the trial is starting now.
Yes.
And I went there. Your timing is great, even though we got delayed.
Yeah.
The timing is great because I went to see them a month ago. It's a 5-hour drive, which in itself is risky. But anyway, I passed all of the tests. I was spent the whole day. They took about 18 vials of blood. They called me 2 weeks ago and said, we'd like you to be in the trial. So the persistence paid off. And I am supposed to be starting the year and a half drug trial this coming Monday.
Wow, this coming Monday. That's really wonderful news.
It's amazing. But I'm telling you, for anybody else, if I wasn't on this every single second, calling people, being, you know, in pursuit of what was happening and what drug, was there any drug coming up? And this, I believe, is a good drug. It's a double-blind trial. I could get the placebo, but it's better than nothing.
Right.
It's hopeful.
Yes, that's one of my questions. Do you know the side effects of this drug?
So they don't give you any information, but I read the 30-page report, and they won't let any information out until after everybody has completed. There are 231 people in 33 places having this, being part of this trial. However, I mean, they did say you will have a reduced immune capacity. You know, you might, you're more prone to infection. But I would say that's okay. I mean, it's better than not being able to stand up, or it's better than a wheelchair.
Right.
Yeah, you just, you can't, he said, don't go into any crowds. I said, nah, I'm not going to any rock concerts. I'm not.
Yes, not yet.
So I think with a lot of, I know an awful lot of people who have different versions of chronic diseases, and whatever medications they are on, it all lowers your immune system. You just have to be careful. That's all. You have to be careful.
Yes. Yeah. I'm surprised that they don't disclose that information before, because that that would be important for patients.
Well, right. Well, they gave it to me when I was there, and read it before you read it before you sign that you will be in this trial. So, at this point, I mean, if I waited, the trial wouldn't be over for a year and a half. And then the drug, if it works, and I do believe it does, it wouldn't be, it might be 5 years for FDA approval. I'll be so old then. I just die anyway, probably.
Susan.
So I really, I'm excited about this trial, and I am. I think that it will work, and I'm always exercising. So I'm just very cautious now, because I've had a couple of bad falls in just the most unlikely places, and it's scary.
Yes, I can imagine. I have another question for you about alternative medicine. Have you tried anything like energy healing, crystal healing, hypnosis? Any form of alternative healing?
You know, I have not. But I do, I've been reading a lot of books, like the Dr. Dispenza books, you know, that he thinks that you have to reprogram your brain. I believe that. You know, you can't waste time on things that don't matter. You have to learn to forgive people. You have to get people who are in your life out of your life if they're just not working now. You know? And that can be very painful, trying to say to a friend, you have to get off my train now. You're not working for me. You're not making me feel good.
That takes courage, doesn't it?
Courage. And it's sad, because you might love this person, but if they're negative and saying poor you, then it's like, no, you can't be a part of my life now. So, so I haven't tried the crystals, but, you know, I was actually looking into the therapy, the ketamine therapy.
Yes, yeah, that's another one. Yeah,
That's another big one. Now, I think there would have to be somebody in California doing that. I don't think there's anybody around here where I live that I would trust doing that. But I don't think I could do that with doing this pill.
Yes, usually psychedelics, psilocybin doesn't really interact with anything, but I'm not sure about ketamine. I do know a lot of people in California. Yes, there's something about, well, for me, it has been always, because I'm very scientific when it comes to spirituality too. I don't believe in anything, having faith in anything, trusting anything. I love the idea of trying and having my own experience as a reference. So I'm surprised I didn't try that yet, because these alternative medicines like psychedelics, the crystal healing is another one of them. Hypnosis is another beautiful one. I talk to a lot of people, a lot of healers all the time here from the alternative side. So I see a lot of doctors too kind of switching, integrating alternative medicine to conventional medicine.
I think that's true. You're absolutely right. They just can't be blind to it now.
Yes. So that's, I guess I had to say that in this podcast, because I interview so many people on alternative medicine that I had to make this comment here. And another one's about spirituality that has to do with me too. And that's what, it's my guiding principle. Always, as you said, forgiving, having love as my lens to see the world and myself and everything else. Right. So do you actually have, I'd love for you to expand a little bit more on that, Susan, on your views, spiritual views, if you call them spiritual, how, besides dispenses, kind of suggestions, and it makes a lot of sense, a lot of the things that he says, but how do you feel? Like, what is your spirituality like?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that. I am a very spiritual person. I was brought up Roman Catholic. I have my own sort of religion, you know? I just believe that, a lot of people's illnesses come from their own behaviors. Mm-hmm. And if you can turn around your behavior and not have any self-pity and not be afraid, you know, a lot of people told me that they were inspired by this book and it gave them strength and lifted their spirits. So that made me feel if I could help anybody, I would be so happy. I believe you have to meditate and have hope and believe in God or a greater being out there.
Yes. See, that's beautiful what you just said about, this is practical spirituality to me, like writing this book specifically to help others. That's what it goes back to it. Once you feel like you have reached that level of spiritual understanding, and then in the practical sense, that's what we do. We ended up becoming a lot more empathetic and helpful in every way to others.
Yeah. Kinder.
Yes. Kinder. Yes.
More forgiving.
That's it. Yes. Yes. And of course it's a practice, but in a way it's like for me has been a challenge still when I see people abusing somebody. If I see a child being abused or an animal.
Yeah.
So that's still like, how can I be, you know, how spiritual can I be not to judge and try to hate the person who is the abuser? So that's one of my practices these days.
Well, that's probably because somebody did that to them or they learned that as a child, you know?
Right. Yeah. There's, having compassion for them. Right.
Yeah. Yes. There's a lot of inner child things going around.
Oh, yes, right. Passing on the legacy of pain, right? Passing on to one another. Yes, of abuse.
Or people act out because of how their lack of self-esteem or the bullying. I mean, children who bully, that's certainly because they don't feel good about themselves, that they want to be mean to somebody else.
Yes. It's for sure. I believe that too. We see this is one way of seeing it. And I have, of course, done that for so long because it's all about perception, isn't it? The way we view things and understand the world.
Yeah.
So one was this. I used to see it that way. Okay. It's coming from trauma. Most people traumatize and just passing on pain. Suffering.
Yes.
And then the other one is that now, mostly recently, the last 10 years, I can't help it but feel that most of us see ourselves as the body, mind only, and the belief system that we are just the body and the mind, and that's why we suffer. Of course, pain, pleasure is part of the human experience, but when it comes to suffering, I have been informed by my own experience of getting to know, let's say, what I am, not even who I am, that it changed everything here. Now, maybe it doesn't change the world, but it changed my way of seeing the world, which has created a lot of peace, inner peace for me.
Yeah.
And not being a selfish thing, because as we said, as I mentioned earlier in you too, it's passing that on. Once you become, you're peaceful enough, then you can't help it, but just flow with that, be kinder and pass on peace. So there's so much value in spirituality, from that kind of spirituality, having our own experience as a reference. Oh, do you want to make a comment on that, Susan?
I think that a lot of people are very screwed up because of their past, and they don't really know it until you're just barreling through life trying to make ends meet in the beginning and find a career and find a relationship. But how you react in all of those things is really a result of, you know, your inner child or whatever they're. Yeah.
Yes, they call it conditioning programmings, right?
Well, right.
And that is sad to see. So the work, it's really self-knowledge. I love the idea of knowledge from that really scientific, you know, way, like experiential. I have a very scientific mind. If I have to try something in order to know, I cannot really say it that it works unless I try it. So there's something about that. Sadly, seeing so many people just coming from programmings, but they are not aware that they have been conditioned to think the way they do and to behave the way they behave. So it's really sad. And I see my own family around me, even my husband a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But we can't really change people, I guess, just kind of be around them, be a support for them.
Right.
That's
right.
What I do.
Yeah. I know I can talk to people. And I won't, a relative of mine, every time I would talk to her, I would tell her a story or something, and she would immediately go to a negative. I could see her brain going around trying to find, you know, I mean, it's just, it's learned behavior, but I'm just hoping that this book is about rising above adversity and moving forward. And it's a big challenge. And it's like a journey book. You know, it's you're not who you were. So you're navigating the beginning of this when I started writing it was about navigating the disappointment and the frustration of living with things that we don't get to vote on. You know, a bad diagnosis.
Yes.
It's hard to stay positive. The initial reaction, you got to really try hard to not say, why me? Because it's really, why not me? I mean, you know. And it's a challenge. You have to really program yourself to take one day at a time and stay in the present moment and not to constantly project to future events, and there are a lot of bad diseases out there, and I'm not the worst for sure. And as Peter Frampton has, their guitarist, was diagnosed with this. Mostly men get it. Weird enough. And he said it's not life ending. It's life changing, and that's true. So you have to learn coping mechanisms, and some of them are, I eat a pretty healthy diet and I always exercise, but we love to walk. And all of a sudden I went from a cane to a walker, holding on to my husband with a cane, and he's strong, fortunately. You know, you have to learn to navigate the new normal, and maybe just have faith. Maybe that's where your faith comes in. Just hold on to your faith and hope for the best. And, you know, it's not just, you can't be full of self-pity.
Ah, yes, Susan. I love that message too. And of course, I know you spoke of faith and hope, but you have been doing so much. So it's not that you, really hoping, praying for something to happen. You are taking action and you're doing something.
I am hoping and I am praying, but I'm taking a lot of action. And I mean, there were times that, like my husband said to me, why do you have all these shoes? You can't wear them anymore. And I looked at him and I said, well, maybe, you know, maybe. And part of this disease is most people get neuropathy in their feet. So I had to give away all my really nice shoes, because all I can really wear, and it's not, I don't care when people say, hey, sneakers are in now.
Yes, I love them, by the way.
Right. But I don't feel like going to a black tie affair with sneakers
on.
But I had to give away my all my heels. Yes. And some of these shoes I loved. But the good thing was I have a wonderful Pilates teacher that I go to twice a week for years and years. And I brought her a pair of shoes once and I said, I don't know, but I've never even worn those once. And she put them on. She said, oh, I feel like these were made for my feet. So I gave her all my shoes. And she was very happy. And my husband said, well, if you can walk in heels again, I'll buy you new ones. So, so you do have to learn to adapt. But one thing I have to say, I mean, some things are funny. Yeah. We went to New York last June, and I don't think I'm up to it this June, but we used to go every year for our anniversary. So now part of this disease is, well, it's in your quadriceps, and I can't get up off a chair. It's very difficult. So if you go in a toilet in a bathroom, imagine some of the new planes have very low toilets. Add a little turbulence to that. So my daughter, and I said to my daughter, who happens to be a doctor, and so is her husband, but she's a big camper. And she said, Mom, you have to get a she-pee. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. She said, it's for campers. It's for women. So you can pee standing up. Okay, this was life-changing for me. I now have to put it in my pocketbook. So otherwise, I'd have to have my husband standing outside a toilet in a restaurant and him yelling in, are you okay? Can you get up?
Right.
That's really embarrassing. But now I have this new technique, the sheepie.
I never heard about them. You see how amazing it is that sometimes it's so simple, right?
Well,
so
you know,
the solution for something, for some
it
things.
It works. Yeah? And it's condensed, and I just carry it with me, and and I ordered it on Amazon. So
that's good news too about that. And have you seen any improvements recently after, you know, engaging healthy diet and exercise as recommended? Have you seen any improvements at all?
I would my acupuncturist told me that he thought I was stable. I had a very bad fall in February. I just, you don't fall, you sort of drop. And I actually crashed on both of my knees, and it was my first ambulance ride. But I was very lucky I didn't break anything. So it took me a long time to get back from that. But I think I'm back now to where I was before, which is all I could hope for. So I think what I can hope for is to be stable. And I walk and do the exercise bike every day and lift weights. And but I'm not steady walking. And the physical therapist told me, don't walk holding onto your husband with a cane. You're better balanced if you. So I got this great looking walker. So I was in a restaurant one day and I had this walker. It's made in France. It's very expensive and it's very good looking. And this woman came over and she said, I love your walker.
You see, that's a replacement for the shoes, I would say.
Exactly. And I said, I wish you told me you loved my fabulous shoes or my fabulous bag or something. But and then somebody else said, stunning walker. I mean, it's like, what?
Yes. Yeah.
So anyway.
I love that too about you, right? Because you're not letting go of the things that you used to, to like, beauty, you know, things that look good and against the body, the physical body, and clothes and all. So that's lovely, and I love the way you talk about your husband too, and how
he's great. I mean, he's a bonus.
Yeah, I love that. See, that's another reference too for all of us. You mentioned earlier, you know, letting go of people who are not really kind, they're not helping us grow in any way.
Or maybe they weren't really your friend in the first place, or, you know, and that's tough because a lot of times we keep people around because they've been around so long. Yes. But then all of a sudden you realize that's not really a friend to say something like that, or you can say it to them, but after a while, I think you really have to protect yourself. And you know, and also you have to grieve the loss of who you were before you can accept the reality of who you have become.
And I have this here.
You do have to do that in order to go forward.
Yes. Wow, that's a powerful message I have here highlighted in blue. And I was about to say, I was trying to get this message here. So yes, that's a big one. So to grieve the loss of who we were, in a sense of, I mean, going through the feelings, of course, but there's, I love the acceptance piece. You see, that brings so much inner peace when we accept what's happening, when we can't do anything about it.
Because you really and truly only have so much energy in your life. And as you said before, if you're, you know, you can't keep fighting it. Well, it's exhausting to keep fighting or denying something. So, you know, you can't keep taking the same risks and pretending nothing's wrong or being mad or, I think you just have to have faith that, and you just have to accept it. And, but that doesn't mean do nothing. I mean, you know, do you know who Ruth Gordon was, this old actress years ago? You may be too young. She was in that movie, Harold and Maude.
Ruth, I don't know who she is. I'm writing it down here.
She had a great quote that somebody asked her, why did you never make it until you were older? What was your secret to making it finally in your 50s as an actor? And she said, never give up, never listen to the facts, and work harder than anybody else. So I love that. That's like my mantra, I'm telling you, because, you know, it's, and as Peter Frampton said, it's not life ending, it's life changing, but you have to you have to sort of go along with the new you, accept the new you, and, you know, try to get better, yes, but you can't put all your energy on that.
Yes, that's such an insightful, wise, and necessary message for unnecessary, to avoid unnecessary suffering. It really goes hand in hand, right, Susan?
Yes.
Because pain is inevitable. I think that's part of the, it is part of the human experience, pain, pleasure, but not suffering, especially unnecessary suffering. I agree. The sooner we accept, the better it is. And knowing that, funny enough, that opens up the clarity for to see the possibilities, to do more investigation, to go deeper into research.
Exactly.
I feel that way. I really do.
Yeah. But I do think many, many, if not all diseases are mental in some capacity. So I really think that you have to work on the mental things. And and also, as a woman, we were talking about women before, but I still grew up as a, even though my generation became better, I still grew up as a people pleaser, you know, and doing things I didn't want to do because I thought I should or I thought I had to. And I went to this eye doctor in the beginning of all this. I started getting dizzy and floaters and in my eyes after I fell in Italy once. I was getting flashes. And I went to this retina specialist at Mass General, Mass Eye and Ear. And she looked at my eyes and looked at the retina, and she said, "Susan, your eyes are okay." I said, "But I'm getting all these flashes and floaters." And she said, "I have one word. No." She said, "Learn to say no."
Wow. What a, that's another powerful message. Especially for women. Yes, Susan, especially for women, the way we have been conditioned, right?
So now I will do that now, and that works. I just say, you know, first my husband would say, "You can do it." And I'd say, "No, the thing is, it's too much work for me to get dressed and go to this affair and go through everything and, you know, then go in on a walker, which is kind of embarrassing, and I get very tired, can't be in a crowd, I can't stand for long periods of time, so I would rather not go." So, you know, the world isn't going to stop if you say no. I think you really have to learn to take care of yourself, which is not easy to do.
Yes. You see, especially if it's coming from self-love, then self-kindness, self-knowledge, then it becomes easier that way. For me, it has been coming from deeper, as you said, mentally, the healing psychologically. That was really important. Then to become, in my case, that's what I, for some reason, I'm attracted to. My path is a spiritual realization, realizing what I am, not just who I am. So that I'm not just a body, mind. None of us are. So that has been a big one, a huge one. It might not, like I said, it might not change the world, but changed my world. In so many ways, in beautiful ways.
Right. You can't change other people.
Right. Right. But what a wonderful message that is too, for who is listening now, women. Yes. Being able to say no, creating boundaries. That's what it is. Being courageous enough to let go.
Yes.
And the message about grieving, you must grieve the loss of who you were before you can accept the reality of who you have become.
Yeah.
Right. That's, you know, that what comes to me is the idea of death, that it's important to kind of see life from those lens too, that everything has an ending, everything is dying. You know, something that's very interesting you know, the fall, autumn, we have all these, the leaves, they become brown, yellow, and red. And so many people, I think in Canada, it's really beautiful there. And then a lot of people go travel to take pictures and all these professional photographers and all, and see the beauty of that. Yeah. But in truth, if you really, you know, logically, with reason, you analyze that, it's death, isn't it? Those leaves are dying. The tree is not dying, but the leaves are. So yeah. We are celebrating death in a way, but without that language. We're not using the word death.
Yeah.
But they see the seasons. Everything comes and goes when it comes to the body, mind, thoughts and the memories. It's just passing. So I learned to see everything that exists as temporary. And me, the ultimate reality, the who you are, I am, and everyone, everything that's here, it's the existence itself. It never changes, it never dies. It's always here, looking at what dies, what changes.
Yeah.
That's a different perspective, I guess, Susan, for some people, but it has been just incredible to have that view, you know, this perspective, this perception of life.
Yeah.
It's really, for me, has been. As a body, mind has been wonderful, and also, I guess, has been a soul desire to just find the truth about what this is.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels really wonderful in every way. So would you like to make a comment about that? I know we're almost at the end, but I would love for you to read a passage in your book if you have it in front of you, too.
Did you say something? I didn't hear the last thing
you
said.
Oh, yes. I said too many things at once. Yeah. Would you like to make a comment about what I just said or read a passage in your book?
Huh. Well, wait, give me a second here.
Yes, yes.
I think that you know who Eckhart Tolle
is. Yes, yes.
Well, I think I was always going backwards and racing in the front. And sometimes when I get bothered by something that I'm not going to be able to do, or I think of that, and I really have to sort of center myself.
Yeah.
And really, when he says, what is there really now in your life that's wrong? And when he says that, it's very funny because there isn't. I could be lying in bed going to sleep, doing breathing things, but at that moment, there's really nothing wrong.
Right.
Yes. Anyway, you couldn't change it if there was, but to be grateful for what you have. And I'm very grateful that I had I got to see the world and travel, because I might not be able to do it, but I feel very lucky that I did get to see it. And one thing that I noticed in spending so much time traveling is that people don't enjoy the travel. They're in a restaurant, and instead of sipping on the wine and just looking at the venue and the beautiful old things around them and the Florentine restaurants and things that have been on the wall for years and in these like 700 era, they're taking pictures of their food. And putting it on
social media.
And the Italians say to us, why are the Americans always taking pictures of their food? And it's cold. They don't even get to eat it.
Yes, right.
You know, so.
Wow.
Anyway.
So, either living in the past or in the future. Yeah, never in the present moment. It's true.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So I think that you have to, you know, mourn. I mourn the loss of high heels, but so does Debbie Harry. She can't wear high heels either. So at this point, it puts everything in perspective. It's more like you can, if I can walk, I'd be happy. Forget the high heels. I just want to be able to walk. But I was looking for the Frankl quote in my book because I think it is the most significant, and I can't find it. But anyway,
you can take your time, Susan. It's okay.
Another one I love is I don't have to attend every argument I'm invited to. Mm-hmm. W.C. Fields. So many times I would get into ridiculous conversations that who cares? You don't have to prove yourself right. Mm-hmm. It's such a waste of energy, you know, and it's negative.
Right.
So that's the mind-body thing.
Yes, that's another big one. And I love that throughout the conversation, you mentioned that, yeah, not wasting energy, focusing the energy to solve a problem, something that's on what's positive. What can propel us forward and not backwards. So
I love
that. And you're right about Viktor Frankl, his message about... It's the way we respond to what happens and not what happens, really. So it's all about that.
It's all about that.
Yes.
Really, when you think about it, it's just all about that.
Mm.
I agree.
And the way you said now, you know, the high heels. So, okay, if you can't now, just putting that in perspective. Now, I'm just happy if I can walk. You just said something like that. And yes. I was just imagining here, I guess, wondering if one day... you might be able to say, being able to accept, even if you can't walk, that I'm here, I'm still here witnessing, you know, having this experience anyway.
Well, I don't know. And, you know, I have a friend and he looked at me one day and he said, you know, and he's a psychoanalyst. He's retired. Yeah. Yeah. He said, you know, Susan, many people can live a full life in a wheelchair. And I said, well, I don't want to be one of them, Paul.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, you just deal with what you have to, you know. Here's one by Alan Alda, who I met. He has Parkinson's. He says, trust in science, keep the faith, and laugh more. Mm. I think that's a good one.
Oh, I love that too. Yes. Yeah.
Anna Quinlan, the life you have led doesn't need to be the only life you have.
Mm.
So we have to embrace change.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And the other thing is, I mean, we're all going down this slippery slope at some point. nobody escapes death. So you just want to live as long as you can. I mean, when people say they lived to be 90, but did they? How long were they healthy? And I mean, my mother lived and drove until she was 95.
Wow.
Then after that, she was alive, but it wasn't the best life. But she was extremely religious. She was there with her rosary beads every day. She was... Yeah. Looking for loopholes, I think.
Yes. So in a way that I don't know if that I would love to know that if it helps. I know the research have showed that it really plays a role, though, in mental health, in health in general. Having faith, have some sort of a spirituality belief system, right? I mean, something beyond ourselves.
Yes.
Yes. I love that idea as a devotional kind of practice, but I'm just so knowledge oriented in a sense of scientific when it comes to spirituality, as I said, that there wouldn't be enough for me just believing something. I want, if God exists, I want to feel it. I wanted to know that's here.
Yes.
And that's why, I practice Vedanta, which is a Hindu philosophy that addresses exactly that. So now that I know that God's here everywhere, there's nothing but God, then it's God in the sense of this unconditional love, freedom, really.
Yeah.
Freedom.
Yeah.
It is just incredible. I love the way you said something that caught my attention. Oh, yes. When the doctor said to you, the psychoanalyst, about, a lot of people live in the wheelchair. There's so many people. See, this is not, I don't look at that way because it's, you see, that's comparison, right? Comparing our experience to someone else. That wouldn't be scientific for me. So that wouldn't work, that kind of way of seeing life. But the way of responding to what's happening, yes, that's a big one. If we can always change that, adapt in a way, right, Susan? That has to do with adaptability too, of being able to dance with life, move with life without... without any resistance. That really transforms into, I mean, from the human experience, it becomes inner peace, I would say, if I have a language for it.
Something,
the nervous system calms down and wonderful things happen. Even the thoughts that come to visit me, they are like music these days. It feels like that. So, yeah, you know, some spiritual teachers, they refuse the idea of meditators of believing or having thoughts. They don't like, that's why they meditate so much.
Yeah.
But I don't really subscribe to that idea. I like, you know, I like my thoughts. I do like my thoughts. They're fun, funny, and meaningful. So, they're like,
yeah. Well, so when I started writing this stuff down, it wasn't a book. It's just that I was writing it down. Right. But then I was so amazed by the things that were happening and how nobody could find out what was wrong and no, you're fine, or maybe it's all in your head, you know?
Right.
And I went, no, it's not in my head. And how it overwhelms you. But I loved this quote by Nora Ephron, so I put it in the front of the book. Somebody asked me, well, why did you write this? I said, because if I tell the story, this is Nora Ephron. Yeah. If I tell the story, I control the version. Because if I tell the story, I can make you laugh. And I would rather have you laugh at me than feel sorry for me. Because if I tell the story, it doesn't hurt as much. Because if I tell the story, I can get on with it. So I feel that by writing that book, I could get on with it. You know, but I really learned a lot.
Yes.
As you said, you're a learner. You're always learning, open to learning new things. And
and
I am. I mean, my husband thinks he said, you're a salesman's dream. You know, you'd buy the last salesperson, you'd buy that. But I'm always willing to say, well, that could be, you know, and but I do think the energy thing is big. You don't have the time to waste energy on the what ifs and doing things you don't want to do and going backwards of why did this happen. It really just doesn't matter at this point.
Right.
You just have to do everything possible and learn every skill possible because I do think you can make yourself better.
Yes. Yes, a billion times of that truth. Yes, Susan. Yes.
Yeah.
It is very much possible. Actually, anything is possible here in this realm. And especially if you're coming from a perspective that's unlimited, that's infinite, like the one that I'm interested in, you know, consciousness, God, whatever that is, I want to tap into that reality because that's infinite.
I always thought I was very psychic, and I've gone to psychics in my life. So my father died on 11/11, November 11th, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So every time I see something, and I don't tell my husband all this because he'd think I was a little crazy probably, but I didn't even tell him that. But every time I see something on Instagram and it will say like, 11/11, your life is about to change. And I'm going, I know it's about to change. I'm going to get the drug and it's going to change and I'm going to, you know, not get worse. I'm not going to be running in a marathon, but if I could stop the progression of this nasty disease, I'd be happy. So I'm taking it like it's in my brain, 11/11. So the other night I was having dinner with my husband and I said, you know, I see things and I take them as signs. And he said, like what? I said, 11/11. And he said, oh, that's my ex. That's my ex-wife's birthday.
Oh. Wow.
And I said, how dare you tell me that? Every time I see 11/11, I'm thinking I'm getting a good vibe here. And now now it'll be a bad vibe.
Yes, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I love your sense of humor too. That says a lot too about, you know, what I really see us to be the freedom itself.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Oh my God, Susan, thank you so much for being you. for being here.
Thank you. I'd love to meet you in person sometime.
Oh, yes. I'm in Florida. So if you come here, I'm not close to Jacksonville, but Clearwater. Have you been to Clearwater?
I have not.
Oh, it's beautiful.
But I'm in Sarasota. Yeah.
Oh, my God. So we're close. West side. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I would love to meet you. Right. So who knows?
Yeah.
I'm hosting an event here. So who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Yeah. Let's talk
about
that
later. I'll follow.
Oh, yes. Let's see. So... let's see, anything else that I would like to mention? Oh, yeah, I want to mention your website. So SusanCKellyAuthor.com. They'll be clickable on the podcast notes so everyone can visit your website. But I also have the Amazon link to the book. It will be here too. Everything will be linked.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much again. We are
Thank you so much. And I'm sorry it was so ridiculous I mean, I had a new computer and I didn't know what was going on. And I never had any problems with Skype. It was so weird. It was just, anyway, I did have the tech guy come over and say, would you please make sure that this is working? And anyway, so, but I'm glad we finally got to do it. And actually, the timing is good because now I'll have a sequel, The Cure.
Ah, yes, that'll be, see, we need that. I would love for that to come, you know, that's my wish, I guess, to come from alternative medicine. But of course, I don't discount conventional medicine.
Yeah, I think that, I think it has to be a combination. I mean, I don't think somebody's going to give you a pill. If you still have these things in your head that you're not cleared up with, if you don't work on yourself in those ways, it's not going to happen just with a pill. I really think it has to be a combination. I do.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for saying that too. Right. Right. The integration of them. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I agree. So Susan, has been wonderful to have had this conversation with you. I love your presence. I love your messages. I love your work. I love everything that you represent. And your message, especially now, is just so important for humanity, going through so much so people can see what is, you know, what is to live something like this, go through this change, this huge change that you've been through. And it still be, you know, this amazing person that you are. And you just made me laugh so many times here.
Oh, good.
And the vibration, the energy is so positive. It's so beautiful. So I want to thank you again for...
you're welcome.
You must be accessing that infinite energy, which it's always present anyway. So thank you so much again for being
here. Well, thank you so much. And I hope I do get to meet you one of these days.
Yes, yes. I would love for that to happen. Or we'll make that happen anyway.
So
bye for now. Take good care of your beautiful self, Susan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Susan Kelly and her work, please visit SusanKellyAuthor.com.
To learn more about this podcast, please visit fitforjoy.org/podcast. Thank you again for listening, and bye for now.